Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Dammit. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me on the phone, Dr. Jeffrey Rediger. Now, Dr. Rediger is the instructor in psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and also the medical director for McLean Southeast's adult psychiatric programs. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing fine.
Thank you for being on with us. I know you've got a very busy schedule and you're doing research and seeing patients. And so just so we get an idea of your day-to-day, what are you working on now? And then I'm going to backtrack to how I was introduced to your work and some of the similarities we have in our paths. But go ahead and tell the listeners what you're working on these days.
Okay. So, well, during the day, I see patients and do administrative stuff. I'm a medical director, as you said, at McLean, and also a chief of psychiatry at a medical hospital, a large urban hospital. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also have been doing research for a number of years, since 2003. I've been gathering medical evidence for people who have recovered from incurable medical illnesses, and I've become very interested in how people heal and how people get better, especially when it's not expected that that's possible. So that's taken me down quite a path, and it's helped me begin seeing a lot of things really differently in medicine.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing in psychiatry and in medicine where you have a scientific background where you need evidence, right? You need
right.
You need proof. You
right.
as do I, a journalist. I need my sources. I prefer
yes.
that they have a landline. You know, these are things that it's not like you can
right.
just bark at the ceiling and oh, we're talking to your dead uncle. It must be true. You know, I need
right.
I need proof. As do you. And when I was first introduced to you, I was writing my third book, This Isn't the Life I Ordered. And apparently it is the life I ordered, I found out at the end. So spoiler alert. But as I was in the thick of it, I was really fighting that. And I decided I was going to go see John of God, who's the healer, João de Deus, that some people have heard of. But he was coming to Toronto. And so I made plans to go there. A friend was going to arrange for me to interview him there. And, you know, all these rules, you got to wear white, and supposedly this dude does these healings, and I'm watching videos and doing my research, and I see this video that you are in, where you are going down to where he is, and what's the name of the town where he works out of, where you flew down to?
Abidjania.
Okay, Abidjania in Brazil. So
yeah.
You go down to Brazil, you see this guy, as to be the eyes and ears of the normal community, and I say normal with these loose air quotes, because as is your medical doctor background, you're probably wondering, I'm going to go see this dude cut people open without anesthesia. He's supposedly pulling out tumors, these, quote, psychic surgeries. Like, I know that's where my head was going, like, huh? I'm going to go do what? And so I got, in my experience, I was part of this group supposed psychic healing where, you know, we all go into this room and then he talks to us and the next thing you know, we're all really tired and you got to go sleep. And I wake up 3 hours later. And I mean, it's a very long, drawn out story. But I looked down and saw what looked to be an incision over my left breast, over my heart, because I had asked to
wow.
heal my heart. And it was plain as day, Jeff.
So that formed. You're saying that formed while you slept?
Formed while I slept. And I had a roommate, my friend Amber, and she's a photographer, and she pulled out her camera and took pictures because, again, I'm a journalist. I need evidence.
Wow.
So
isn't that fascinating?
We took the pictures, and I'm
yeah.
still wrapping my head around it. So then I'm watching. Before I left, though, I watched your video, and here you are walking out of these surgeries, scratching your head, going, I know what I saw. I just can't wrap my head around it. You know,
yeah.
And then you start bleeding through your shirt, a little prick over your left breast, over
right.
your heart,
right.
and you bled for a while. So what, explain to the listeners who haven't seen that video, what am I leaving out? What happened for you?
Well, okay, so this changed my life, and it doesn't mean that I understand it.
Same. We're twins like that. All right, go on.
It's kind of hard on a
yeah.
guy who's been trained in medicine and even in theology. It kind of upended everything. But
right.
So, yeah, so I went down there. It's a long story how I ended up down there. I had a patient who I was seeing clinically, and he had a mother who was a nurse at Mass General Hospital in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
His mother asked to join us back in 2002 for a session because she wanted to tell her son that she had pancreatic cancer, and that's an awful cancer.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty short, brutal end, typically, and not really, people don't usually recover from that.
Mm-hmm.
So she wanted to tell him that, and then she decided she was going to go down to Brazil and see John of God. And then she went on this journey, and just went through all of these changes in her life. She would call me from Brazil and tell me that she was basically going through a transformation and giving up a lot of control issues. She was learning how to love, all these things. She came back. She stayed longer than she expected, and then she did come back from Brazil. Mm-hmm. And at that point, she was feeling much better. She was eating steak and salad and cooking for her family and just feeling a lot more energy. And then she took her children, her three children, to Brazil with her and just continued to have this journey. And then she started telling me, listen, Doc, you need to come down and see what's going on here because amazing things are happening. And I said, you know, at that point, I had just graduated from residency. I was a new medical director at McLean. I was a new faculty member at Harvard. And I was like, that's fascinating, but no thank you. Because
right.
I was afraid. You know,
right.
I didn't really know how my peers would understand it. And it sounded pretty woo-woo to me. And that's just not what my background has been.
Right.
So I said, no. So she said, okay, well, then I'm going to start having people call you and tell you their stories. And she started having people do that.
Mm.
And she was persistent. And so I really owe this pathway to her in a lot of ways. And I listened to a lot of stories. And then finally, I did go to Brazil myself. And my goal was to only talk to people who had hardcore medical evidence of accurate diagnosis and really clear evidence that they had sustained a full recovery.
Okay.
I wanted this to be just really, really clear. And so
I have breast cancer and now it's going to be removed, tumor removed, and then boom,
yeah,
you can
exactly.
take, yeah, okay, got it.
So that's what I did. And so mm-hmm. I went down and I interviewed people there. I spent my days interviewing people. And then, so I was there for a little over a week. And then on the Saturday, just prior to my departure, I had that experience that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I'll be real brief about it. Fergus was a filmmaker. He had heard that I was interviewing people. He was making a documentary for Ireland and for their PBS station. And he thought, well, that's perfect. There's a doc down there interviewing people, and maybe I can videotape those interviews, and that's perfect for what he was trying to do. So he videotaped some of my interviews. And then on Saturday, we had interviewed a mother and a son about an illness. And then we walked away afterwards, and he was asking me questions about it, and he was rolling the camera as he asked these questions. I was saying, well, you know, I don't really understand what's going on here. I said, I believe it in my head, but not in my heart. There's something going on, and there's evidence for it, but I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, then, did you hurt yourself? You're bleeding. And I pull up my shirt, and there's a tiny 1/8 inch horizontal incision on the skin over my heart that was bleeding a lot. And that was confusing for me.
Mm-hmm.
Probably
scary, too, a little
scary
bit.
Scary, too. Yeah,
nobody came up to you with a knife and poked you. It just happened.
No, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. And so I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
And it bled quite a lot. It bled for about an hour and 10 or 15 minutes. And, you know, we put the bandage on, but the bandages would get heavy with blood and just fall off. And so it wasn't so it got some attention and all that sort of thing. And I look like a dolt on the – I just was speechless. I didn't know what to say. I didn't understand what was going on. Didn't have words for it. So then went back to the United States and for several years didn't really know how to talk about it. But I think that experience in trying to understand that and trying to understand the interviews I'd had where I saw things are just really hard to understand from a Western medical perspective.
Give us an example of some of the stuff you witnessed firsthand.
Yeah, okay. So like John of God would have me stand there next to him while he was doing what he calls his eye surgery. And so he would take sometimes it's a scalpel, sometimes it's a paring knife, and he would really cut on the cornea of
right.
the eye. And, you know, I would watch this, and it's a bizarre experience because I never saw anyone blink. I'm telling you, if I saw a knife coming down on my eye, I would absolutely blink.
And
it
scream.
Wasn't just Brazilians.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd pull away. I'd have a reflex action.
Right.
But and what's fascinating, it wasn't just Brazilians or people that were part of that culture. It was Americans and Europeans like you and I, and
mm-hmm.
they didn't blink, and they didn't pull back. They didn't shrink away from it. And then he would, you know, put some cuts on their eye, and then he saw it not as about the eye, but as a spiritual surgery to open their spiritual sight so that they would then be able to have a new understanding of whatever their physical illness was and allow a spiritual light in more easily, I guess is one way you could say it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would talk to these people during this little quote-unquote operation, and I would talk to them afterwards. I'd say, okay, were you in an altered state? What were you experiencing? What do you remember from this? And sometimes people didn't remember much about the experience. Sometimes they had vivid memories of it. Sometimes they seemed like they were in an altered state. It was almost like what you could call a spiritual anesthesia or something like that. But some people didn't seem altered. There's a lot of individual variation around that.
Mm.
So I had a hard time. But I will say, after listening to story after story, the powers of the mind and the heart are so powerful and unacknowledged and understudied in our culture.
Yeah.
We have not mapped that wilderness yet.
And what can we do? How can we do that? And I know you're doing so much research, like studying these cases of where healings can't really or are not supposed to happen, but they do. So,
right.
So I think just by speaking about the fact that there are all these unexplainable, I mean, I've interviewed miracles, people who have died for good long. I mean, Dr. Mary Neal was without oxygen for 30 minutes. 30 minutes. She's a living miracle. So we know those things happen, but yet why is it so hard for people to be okay with it?
Well, that's a great question, and I believe, as I've listened to these stories now for years, I have come to believe that when you look at the word miracle in the dictionary, it's a misunderstanding of miracle, I believe. A miracle is thought to be something supernatural that breaks into the natural laws and does something different. I don't think that's how it is, and I think modern physics is more consistent with the way we're talking about it now. I think what happens is that there are mental and spiritual laws that we have not yet fully understood or mapped or defined.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, because when you listen to these people over and over, you start to see patterns. You see whether a change, a deep physiological change happens in 10 minutes or 10 years, the pattern is still the same. And a lot of the same factors are still in place. And so I think that there are spiritual laws, there are mental laws, and that's what we need to begin to define and understand. The Western culture is brilliant at defining the physical laws of the universe, and that's the gifts we've given to the rest of the world. Ever since Isaac Newton and all these great scientists, we now have smartphones, we have airplanes, we have warm showers, we have a physically comfortable life.
Right.
But the next horizon is to now begin defining the mental and spiritual laws, because they're a bigger deal. They are more powerful than the physical laws, and that I've become convinced. You can't see these stories. And I'll tell you, when you sit in the medical hospital, in the psychiatric hospital, day after day, and you start to see it from this perspective. I had a woman come in with atrial fibrillation recently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, she came in with chest pain to the emergency room, 64 years old. She'd been with her husband since age 15. The day before she came to the emergency room, he had abruptly said to her, "I'm leaving and moving to Florida," mm-hmm. leaving the marriage. She was devastated, had never been with another man. All of a sudden, this vacuum opened up in her life, and she had no idea what was going on.
Right.
Came to the emergency room with chest pain, diagnosed with panic attack and sent home. Comes back a month later, chest pain. This time she has atrial fibrillation. That's a serious disorder of the heart rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that those are connected? Absolutely. You do this work long enough, you start to realize. Woman comes in repeatedly with thrombophlebitis, with painful disorder,
mm-hmm.
every time she has a really intense fight with her partner. So you start to see that a lot of what's coming into the hospital is very much stress-related. And we're not even asking people about what's going on in their lives, and we're not treating that. We put people on medications and send them home, and we don't even address the issues. We don't treat causes. We treat symptoms.
Right, and that has to be completely rebuilt. I mean, that to me is the main thing that medical schools need to focus on. I remember when my father was being treated for his brain tumor, there was no bedside manner. It was they came in, they told us all these things, and then they swooped out with their cape, and it was like, what? I mean, it was devastating.
Yes, it is devastating.
I can't
That's
stand
right.
it. So what can we do? How can
and
we
what
help
kind of cancer
change
was that?
It was brain tumor, unfortunately. So he died within
brain tumor.
A year. Yeah, grade 4. Glioblastoma. So
glioblastoma multiforme, mm-hmm. which I had three cases of people who've recovered from that. In fact, this afternoon I'm interviewing a person who is at John of God in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
and he went there with glioblastoma multiforme, the worst form of brain cancer you can get, and that was back in 2002, I believe. And I'm interviewing him this afternoon. He's been healthy for years.
Wow. See, and this almost hurts my surgically altered by John of God heart to hear this story, because my father passed away in 2001, and I had not heard of John of God yet. And
in
all these alternative ways, there's another healer named Master John Douglas. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I've not.
He's from Australia. We'll have to connect the dots on that, because a lot of healings, miraculous, unexplainable healings have happened. He is now teamed up with the American Medical Association with some of his, he's got these healing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, these healing medallions, because he wants to show the research that when you have this sort of consciousness going into a surgery and then waking up, and because so many illnesses happen just from bacteria in the surgical procedure, right? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
right.
And people don't realize that just by cutting someone open, you're putting them at risk because of all the bacteria flying around in a hospital. So
that's right.
One of his big things is to try to energetically clean an operating room with these kind of healing medallions, which a lot of doctors think is just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs for obvious reasons. But he's showing all the evidence that this is actually helping. And so when you have this evidence, and so you've got these conversations that happen, but yet I know some people that have been to John of God and it hasn't healed them and they haven't been better. So why does it work for some and not for others? It seems to work for a lot, but
well,
it still doesn't work
really
for everyone.
Good question. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
We look at the ultimate achievers in sports and we study them. We look at the ultimate achievers in business and we study them. But in medicine, we belittle or dismiss people who have really achieved a level of vitality and health that is what we did not expect or think was possible for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've not ever studied we don't really study health or healing. We call it spontaneous remission. I mean, if you're on the science side and somebody gets better, you call it spontaneous remission and you dismiss them and say, well, that's just a fluke. There's nothing to look at there. When you look at enough cases like these we're talking about, these are all spontaneous remission cases. There's nothing spontaneous about spontaneous remission. These people have changed their lives fundamentally at every level. They change what they think about. They change how they experience themselves in the world. They begin to kick out these self-defeating thoughts that maybe they're not good enough, that maybe there's something dignified and decent and good and valuable about who they are, and these different kinds of changes they make, and they have a new experience of themselves in the world, and we don't look at that. There's a lot of reasons why we don't, but that's the kind of, we need to study healing, and doctors don't study health and healing. They study medications and diseases, and so we have not even begun to study what healing is.
Right. And we need to not just make it that other building over there. Like when we went you know, at Cedars-Sinai, they've got the regular hospital and they have that alternative building where there's massage and aromatherapy.
Right.
And, you know, that's why can't we incorporate them all together?
Yes.
Other places do.
Yeah. I think people are starting to do that. Mm-hmm. Medicine needs help to do that because people are starting to do that. And as people start to take charge of their health and say, well, I'm going to go look at this because I've had diabetes for 20 years and I'm on insulin and nothing's better. I'm just treading water. When people start to look at other modalities and then start to get better and the word starts to spread, well, that's worth looking at. So
yeah, I have a friend.
Right.
She went into for her checkup and she's been feeling really lethargic and had a weird rash on her arm and all these things. So they put her on antidepressants. They gave her some topical cream for the rash, you know, but didn't ask her one question about her home life, like you say, her relationship. Is she getting sleep? Her diet. Well, she was going through, a bad divorce and her diet consisted of red M&Ms. That's it. So, you know, apparently that wasn't the best diet for her. And, you know, so then she goes to a nutritionist and says, why can't I sleep? And then the nutritionist says, well, what are you eating? She's like, well, red peanut M&Ms. There's some protein in there, right? And she's like, okay, the red dye number whatever right out of the gate is the worst thing for your body. And you're putting nothing but that in your body? Maybe you're allergic to the red dye. So as soon as she cut out the M&Ms, got a smoothie in the picture, it was amazing the difference. I mean, and I say this to people all the time. If you're depressed or you're sad, check on your emotional well-being if you've got toxic yes. people in your life, and then look at what you ate for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yes.
And I guarantee you, it's like yes. we put the best gas in our car. You know, the fuel light goes on. It's like, but we put the biggest amount of MSG and toxic chemicals in our body on a regular basis, and we expect it to thrive, and it's just not going to do it.
Well, Jennifer, you're so right, and that's well said. I think that what we also do is when we go to the doctors, we treat symptoms and not causes. And so it's like if your oil light is on and you snip the oil light indicator telling you need to change your oil and you just get rid of the oil light and you think your problem's okay. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a lot of what we do in medicine is we treat with medicines that don't treat the cause. And I can't tell you what people have to say when their diabetes goes away because mm-hmm. of lifestyle changes or they change what they eat, like you're saying, mm-hmm. and other things, and then their illnesses go away, and they say, I've been seeing doctors for 20 years, and no one's ever talked to me about this is a fixable illness.
Right.
And so you're absolutely right. I think that what we know from research is that when the Western diet is exported to other countries, it's not that the rates of heart disease or diabetes or autoimmune illness or cancer go up. They exponentially go up. And so I do really believe that the white sugars, the white flours, and the sugars, the unhealthy fats,
right.
those are disease creating.
Mm-hmm.
And people that change that, they get substantially better. Now, health is not just about changing your diet. It's more to it. Health comes from a higher place, ultimately, health and vitality.
Right.
But a lot of people do make dietary changes. Not everybody does, but a lot do.
So take me back then when you came home from John of God. I know for me, it was sort of like the relationships that I had in my life that couldn't really honor a conversation like this sort of fell
yeah.
by the wayside. It altered a lot of things, and
yep.
and it was really hard to wrap my head. I still have trouble describing it. I still have a hard time understanding
yeah.
it because I am a factual person and I like evidence. It's hard to be like, and another thing, I had this scar.
Yeah.
So when you got back, I mean, did that happen for you? Did things just get upheavaled for quite a bit?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I come from a really conservative world. My father was Amish. We left the Amish community outwardly when I was two, but not so much inwardly.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up without TV and radio and a lot of the things that I think people typically assume will be in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in a different world, and I went to college, and so that was a big step out of that world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a long journey. But I came back, and on that Monday, my wife asked for a divorce. She thought that maybe what happened to me was something very spiritually dark, and that's something I had to struggle with and sort through. And so it is absolutely true. If you go through a huge change in your life, sometimes the people change too.
Mm-hmm.
And great things can come out of that if you stick with what the path really is for you, but it doesn't mean that there's not going to be major changes in your life.
So for people out there who are listening that want to start maybe incorporating some spiritual practices in their daily routine and kind of work on their spiritual health as well as their physical health, what are some of the basics that you do? Do you meditate? Do you run? Do you recommend a 30-second breathing technique? I mean, what are some of your go-tos?
Well, what I believe is, after listening to people for years, there's things I don't understand yet, but I know that they work for some people. People talk about energy work a lot, and I don't know how to really understand that, because what is energy?
Mm-hmm.
We all know that when certain people walk into a room, the room lights up, and there's some kind of energy there, but we don't know how to define what that is. It is some kind of vitality, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But what is that? How is that different or similar to the energy in an MRI spinning MRI machine? I mean, we had a person at Good Samaritan Hospital who went into an MRI machine with cancer, and it came out of the MRI, and the cancer was gone. And so what is it about energy? We don't know how to talk about that yet. But I will say that absolutely experimenting with different modalities to figure out what works for you as a particular person is worth looking at. I do think that there are some things that we can do. We can change what we eat. We can change our exercise pattern. We can take charge of our lives and our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an important place for that. I've seen some of the stories I have where people do that and their diabetes goes away and their heart disease goes away. But it's not usually just about that. What people really want to talk to me about is about the psychological changes they've made in their lives or spiritual changes. You know, you got this one lady who I adore who was diagnosed with cancer. She'd always been this sweet, demure, quiet lady who was in a really difficult marriage. And in the context of obtaining her healing, she kind of decided that she had been very repressed for many years and always been very nice to everybody else, but stuffed a lot of her feelings. So she quit doing that. She became this saucy lady who swore sometimes and was quite a ride.
Right.
And she had a lot to say, and her cancer went away. And she believes that learning to just get her stuff out and let everybody know what she really thought about things, and if people didn't like it, they were still going to have to deal with her real feelings. And she believes that liberated something in her that then she didn't need the cancer in the same way anymore. And so that kind of those kinds of stories, you listen to those long enough, you think, wow, the mind-body, our body is a metaphor for something that the deeper self or soul is trying to learn, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And she needed to express who she is in the world and feel okay about that. And maybe then she didn't need the cancer in the same way. I mean, that's a fascinating story.
Right, right. So you, what is your faith base? I mean, you studied theology, so you know about everything.
Well, I think, so yeah, so I came from a really conservative and fundamentalist world. And then in seminary, I went to Princeton Seminary, and that's more of a Presbyterian school, but there's a lot of different faiths represented there. So Buddhism was a fabulous experience for me. And then I converted to Eastern Orthodox Christianity in med school. A professor and I were trading articles. And I've really come to be more interested. I think a transition for me from religion to spirituality has been a really important transition, and John of God certainly played a role in that for me.
Yep.
Because I think if religion is the, if spirituality is the flame that lights the soul and the heart, religion is the box, and it's the attempt to box that flame. And I think what's fascinating to me is to see that in the last 50 or 60 years, spirituality has become a thing in culture in a way that was never possible in all of the prior history of humanity. So now spirituality is becoming a huge deal for millions of people around the world, and they are finding their own paths to God in a way that I think is really, really promising for the future.
I think so, too. And be cautious, all of you listening, how you go about your spirituality. Carolyn Mace, who's been a guest on this show, a good friend of mine, I know you're going to be presenting with her at Omega later
right.
this month. She says she can't stand the people with the crystals, and they go off on these, you know, hikes, and then they think that they're suddenly spiritual. And it's about service and gratitude in addition to working on your spiritual self. And, yeah, if you want to get a crystal, go ahead. But she's like, if I see one more crystal store.
Right. Well, I think ultimately it's about our capacity to give and receive love, right?
Right, yes.
And so anything that fosters that is important. And, and you know, Freud, I mean, he was a psychiatrist. He was not a theologian, but I like his definition. He said he really defined mental health, and I think this is a decent definition of spiritual health, is defined by our capacity to work and love, our capacity to work productively for a real mission and purpose and to receive and give love with others. And to do those two things is a bigger deal than one would think from just saying the two words.
Right. No, it's true. So what are you going to present at Omega? What are you going to be telling those who are in attendance?
So Carolyn is brilliant at the mystical. She is truly a mystic. And so she has been studying the deeper mystical and spiritual laws of the universe for decades and helping people with that. I'm a scientist. I'm a physician. And I am absolutely committed to not allowing what I write or speak about to be dismissed as alternative or complementary medicine, because I work in mainstream medicine and psychiatry, and I see every day what's coming in through the emergency rooms, and I see the heart attacks, I see the unbearable headaches, I see the out-of-control diabetes, I see the colitis, I see the back pain, and cancers. And I know that we are treating symptoms with medications and procedures, and we are not treating the causes. And until we have a medicine that treats the causes, we are not helping people as much as they deserve. Mm. And so that's what has to change.
That sounds like a great complementary to each other. I can't wait. That'll be really fascinating.
Yeah.
And for people out there that are listening and you've got a headache that's chronic, or, you know, take a tally of your world, right? Take a note, a mental health note, and look around. See who's in your, you know, immediate sphere. If you have a friend that every time you talk to them and they suck the life out of you and they're energy vampires, maybe you should get a new friend.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I think a lot of times what happens, and what the patterns I see over and over again, is that well-meaning people will take care of others, but they will neglect their own deeper aspirations, their own needs, their own wishes, their own bodily, social, emotional or spiritual needs, and you have to put that front and center and wake up and see what's brilliant and magnificent about the unrepeatable you and live from that. And that is a different kind of life for many people.
What are some of the most recent, or actually most memorable, I should say, cases that kind of still shatter your medical world but keep you in the spiritual world?
So, well, there's a few.
Many,
actually. What would be the most helpful for the listener today is the question. I think, for example, the woman who I interview, I'm re-interviewing people right now because I'm writing my book. And so I'm going back and talking to people who I've talked to in the past.
Sure.
And to talk to Claire, who had pancreatic cancer. Diagnosed in 2008, and then she had a CT of the, she was told she had a few months to live, and to then have a CT in 2013 and the cancer is gone. She has a fabulous story. She has a website, www.livingwithpancreaticcancer.com. Mm. She put up the website just so she said when she was doing her research after being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and she couldn't find a single case of survival, she said, I just want you to know there's one case out there. And she talks brilliantly and wonderfully on her website about what she did. Mm-hmm. She did many of the things that we're talking about today. I re-interviewed a lady last week who had stage 4 metastatic melanoma of the skin. And she's a fabulous story. She's an IT person, a computer geek, and all these things, and just a real, you know, just never entertained anything woo-woo in her life at all. And then she also had another piece that makes it a great story. She had really probably the leading melanoma doc in the country. And this is what he does for research and a very prominent position. And she was doing this spiritual work and having these dreams at night that she was loved and she was not alone. These visions, this being would appear to her in her dream at night while she was asleep. And she was making all these changes in her life consistent with this new identity and understanding of herself. And her doc was measuring this mass on her neck every week and watching it go down in size by a half inch every week and going, what in the world is going on here? This is not possible. I don't know what you're doing, but keep it up.
Right.
So that kind of thing. And so, there's a lot of stories.
My dad got some Qigong when he was doing the brain tumor treatments, and they had they had already removed what they could of the tumors without affecting too much of his motor skills and speaking and such. And so it had moved into the frontal lobe, and so he went and got some Qigong from this gentleman, Dr. Zhou, here in Chicago, in the other building at the Illinois Masonic Hospital. You know, there's a little wellness center, sort of satellite building. And he would go, and afterwards, it was like he had this incredible peace that nobody could explain. And when we got the scans, and his tumors had shrunk 70%, and nobody could explain why. And it was so fabulous, because he really... We had this conversation, and I wrote about this in my first book, where I was so worried. I was in my head, okay, now what do we do? What specialist do we go to? I heard about carrot juice in Cuba. Let's go get it. And, okay, we're going to, all these things. We're going to go here. We're going to go there. And so I was in my mind just running this movie over and over again of my panic. And he said, you know, hon, it doesn't matter. And I said, what? He goes, I can't read. I can't write. I can't play the piano. hell, I can't even drive anymore. All these things that I used to do and I love to do, but it doesn't matter because I can still love.
Boy, isn't that just a beautiful statement?
And I was like, huh? And he goes, and that's all that matters. I mean, he had that complete clarity. It was so real. And it was like, I heard what he was saying, but I didn't want to feel what he was saying. You know what I mean? Of course, I didn't want to accept that. I wanted to fix it. And so I think about that often, and watching and witnessing what happened at John of God. I mean, there were people in wheelchairs that couldn't walk that left their walking. There were people, one woman had an ankle that was bad. When she was sleeping, she saw some beam of light go into her ankle, and the next day she has no pain in her ankle. I mean, I'm doing all these interviews in the line as we're all waiting to go and see if there's going to be another group surgery, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And I'm just going, what just happened here? And so I think everyone needs to understand that we don't have all the answers. We have to keep gathering evidence and facts and data, and that's what you're doing, and that's what keeps me up at night. And I just give you such kudos for the work that you're doing, and I can't wait to read your book. When does it come out?
It comes out the Tuesday before Christmas of 2018, it's going to take a while yet. You have some incredible stories in understanding yourself, Jennifer. I think it's really true that we are a very material culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think love in some way is a huge deal, and we often don't realize what a huge deal it is, and we don't understand how to really accept the power of that into our lives completely.
Right.
I think physics is way ahead of us on this in a lot of ways. Physics determined and proved 100 years ago that Einstein and Niels Bohr and all these scientists that the world of the five senses is an illusion, and it does not exist in the way that we think it does. It just simply does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so the physical body is not what we think it is. The table that we are sitting at does not exist in the way we think it does. From a higher perspective, the table and our bodies are simply a few very, very tiny particles spread at enormous distance from each other, and they look and feel solid because they are vibrating in a constant resonance with each other.
Mm-hmm.
There is something behind all of this that's more real, that's a bigger deal than the world of the five senses, and that is a huge piece of what people like the Qigong story and love that you just talked about. There's something there that when we experience that, it's like the curtains open and we see all of this differently. We realize that we matter more than we realize. We're not as alone as we thought, and that love is what really matters.
Totally. And it's like the Matrix. You just take a shift over there, and the next thing you know, you're going through a different door.
Yep, that's right. The world is not what it appears to be.
Not
at all. None of us are who we appear to be.
Right. So get over yourselves, people. You're not all that. But you are all love. So we have to remember we're all connected. If people want to find you, Jeff, how would you like them to search for you? Social media? I mean, I know I watch your TED Talks by going on YouTube. What is your preferred method of people finding you?
MedicineofHopeAndPossibility.com.
Perfect.
MedicineofHopeAndPossibility.com.
And then you can be in touch with Jeffrey there. Go to Omega if you're in the New York area in October of 2017, depending on when you're listening to this. But definitely keep up with what he's doing. And I can't wait for the book. Let's hope we have many more conversations before that book is released. Is that a deal?
Really great, Jennifer.
Thank you. Thank you for all that you do. And for everyone out there, treat others the way you'd like to be treated and stay spiritual, please. I'm Jen Weigel, JenWeigel.com, and we will talk with you next time.